It's the Shay Anything Podcast. It's a normal Shay Anything Podcast. Doug Williams here alongside Andy Martino and nobody else in Studio 31 at SNY's downtown studios. The Shay Anything Podcast is available on any podcast app that you use. Just search for Shay Anything, subscribe, rate, and review us. We'd really appreciate it. It's been a long time since it was just you and I.
Well, we're sort of like a marriage that tries to introduce a third person in order to, you know what, never mind. We had some guests for a while. Hein was here last week. I was gone in Vegas. Fisher was here then.
I thought you were going to say, like, it's like a marriage in that you add a little bit of independence and you go and do other things.
That's what I was saying. What were you thinking?
Well, you said add a third person, which may be a part of independence, but I just thought that was...
Yeah, I don't know where your mind is, but let's talk baseball.
Okay, yeah, totally. You definitely... I was the one that led us down that path, for sure. Man. I'm to blame.
Sicko.
I thought of you... last week, watching baseball.
I thought of you often last week because I was working with you.
And I was watching the Yankees play the A's, and Jed Lowry came up to the plate. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Michael Kay talking about him and his career and how he was this huge prospect, right, in the Red Sox organization?
Right, correct.
And... it made me realize you always say this thing about prospects, and you will say that's if so-and-so becomes Orlando Cabrera. We had a casual conversation about if Gleyber Torres has the career of Orlando Cabrera, is that a success? And you would say, yeah.
An overwhelming success.
Right. He made a lot of money. He had a long baseball career. He was a very solid player for a long time. And, you know, while on the surface I agree with all of that, I was kind of like, well, for some reason, I expect Gleyber Torres to be a star. And Orlando Cabrera was a good player, but never a star. And so I was thinking about Jed Lowry and your reasoning, and it made me realize something, which was, you know, the way Michael Kay was talking about it was, this guy was a huge prospect and has been in the big leagues for a long time, just made the All-Star team for the first time. And there, it kind of made me realize that there is a fundamental issue with the way we view prospects.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And I think the problem with the Jed Lowrys out there is that there is always the possibility that we undervalue players for long, successful careers because we think they're going to be superstars before they even get here. That is so problematic. It gets in the way of us just enjoying good baseball from the guys in your organization.
I couldn't agree more with what you just said. There's a lot going on there. Player development is nonlinear, and I think we live in kind of an on-demand culture at the moment where people want, like, I mean, you see in other sports too, like, I don't know, someone like an Andrew Luck who came up with all this hype and then has had the injuries, and you come back and you say, well, what are the expectations now if you're a Colts fan? Or I just think there's something about... wanting it now. And then guys burst on the scene every once in a while, like a Matt Harvey or a Jabba Chamberlain or something, and you think, like, you have all this unbelievable excitement in a player, like, right away, but then it doesn't last in a lot of cases. And then you have some guys that take forever to develop and then have a short window mid-career where they're really good. And then you have your Jed Lowrys or your Nick Markakis's, who also made his first All-Star team this year, or your Orlando Cabrera's, who are, to me, are the real successes in the sport, other than, like, your Mike Trouts or whatever, obviously
right.
It is.
Other than the long-term superstars.
Yeah, which almost never happens, and it's just I think what it's a function of is that we often don't realize, and fans often don't realize, how unbelievably hard sustained success in the game is, how humbling the game, just how hard it is to play baseball. So if you're extremely talented, if you can string together 10 years where you can make a major league roster, that to me is like an astounding achievement that any young player, because how many number ones on the prospect list don't hardly get a cup of coffee?
Right, well, that's the biggest point. And it actually occurred to me when we did the Keith Hernandez interview, and I was reading Keith's book, and he was talking about all the ups and downs he had when he got called up. Now, he was a big prospect, and, you know, he got sent down in the Cardinals organization and all this stuff. And I was thinking, you know, if that were today, we make such a big deal out of it. We always talk about, well, we don't know who Michael Conforto is. Do we know who Gary Sanchez is? And it should be categorized as normal mm-hmm. when young baseball players come up and are great, or young
exactly.
baseball players come up and are terrible and then end up being something different, you know? And I want to relate it to Ahmed Rosario and Dom Smith, because Dom Smith has had a lot of ups and downs. But that should not be... He's not an outlier for that. Like,
right.
most young players that get called up have ups and downs. Ahmed
right.
Rosario, even the scouting reports that we knew about Ahmed Rosario before he came up were just projections.
Right.
Like,
so,
it's
right.
not like we've seen the full player.
And we've talked on this podcast and on BNNY many times, I think, about how this happens, how it's not as complex a process as one might think. Like, a scout says to one writer, I think that Wheeler's the next Verlander when Wheeler's in Double A, and then boom, that gets around, that quote gets around, and
yep.
then everyone's excited, when reality is obviously a lot more complex with pitchers and position players. So I think you're making a great point. And I also wonder if being in New York even magnifies that further, because let's take, say, Dansby Swanson in Atlanta, who was a similar... everyone
Another
thought that the Braves
example.
Were brilliant to trade for Dansby Swanson for Shelby Miller a couple years ago when Swanson was the number one pick, and it was a good trade for the Braves. But then Swanson ends up in the minor leagues the year after he debuts, and it's just the way it goes. It's the ups and downs of it. Or a Jason Hayward, who ended up contract aside as like a defensive star but a very average offensive player in a lot of ways. And then Freddie Freeman, who had less hype than Hayward, actually becoming a superstar. It's just so... But then Freeman's had a bad year or two in there, too. So there's so many... just variables in how these careers play out, that to have your Mike Trout careers, or your David Wright careers, by the way, or Derek Jeter, or these kinds of things, or Johnny Damon, or these, all these examples of guys who had these long runs of being all-stars, just how rare that is, and how you cannot ever reasonably expect that out of any of your team's prospects until they do it in the big leagues for years.
Well, how do we avoid it? Because I'm thinking about, like, Yoan Moncada. Had so much pressure on him, and none of it is his fault. Obviously, he was a very good prospect, so he's going to have a high pressure on him. But the fact that you get traded in a deal for that stud of a player in Chris Sale.
Yeah.
So how do we avoid judging these guys too harshly right away when, another example, I know we just keep throwing out weird examples, but Aaron Hicks became the player Aaron Hicks is now.
That's a great example.
He's now becoming the best he can be.
Top offensive center fielder who can catch the ball with almost
yeah.
the best of them.
So, like,
yeah.
how do we not label mm-hmm. the Yoan Moncadas?
We just have to keep fighting the good fight, Doug. We have a platform. We can de-hype these guys. Like, it's not going to happen. You could shut down the internet and make every GM stop bragging about their ranking on the Baseball America list. Neither of those things is going to happen. I think it's a combination of team. If you're a general manager, you have two groups of people that you need to appease. One is your ownership group, and one is your fans. Okay, so by having hyped prospects, you can simultaneously please both while your team sucks on the big league level. You can be the White Sox and losing, but you can tell your owner, but we got all these guys and we're ranked in the prospect list, and then they're going to come up to the big leagues and be under cost-effective control for 6 years, and the owner is going to like hearing that rather than we need to go sign a big free agent. And the fans just get so into it. Like a Met fan following the Peter Alonso development. Like, that's been something that's probably excited a certain online Mets Twitter, Mets fan, more than the big league team. So it's something for people to get into, and that's why I don't think it's a trend that's going away anytime soon. But it is a shame because, you know, I remember having a conversation, an interview with Steven Strasburg about this a couple years ago when Wheeler came up, and the Mets happened to be playing the Nationals, so I asked Strasburg about the impact of hype. And Strasburg said, it's horrible. People build you up just to break you down. He seemed really embittered by the whole experience. And Steven Strasburg is actually another example of a pretty solid big league career, problematic in some ways, results that you would take in your rotation, obviously, any day of the week, but probably considered a disappointment because of the hype level.
Right.
So that's and what he told me that day is probably, when did Wheeler debut, 2013 or 14, something, in one of those years. And Strasburg literally said, they build you up to break you down. And that is the way this prospect thing happens, because as much as Mets fans love Peter Alonso right now, they're going to hate him just as bad if he's ever hitting 180 over a full season up here.
And I'm trying to compare and contrast Rosario and Peter Alonso, though. In Mets fans' heads, I think there's a difference there. Peter Alonso, they want to see because of eye-popping numbers. Mm-hmm. That I think is fair. Like if you're looking and you're like, this guy's stats are unbelievable, you're like, okay, he deserves a promotion. Whereas Ahmed Rosario, in my mind, maybe I'm wrong, maybe Met fans feel differently, but I never really looked at his stats. I listened to the rankings, I listened to the what he will be, the comparisons. Like, that's where I think it skews in the unhealthy
And it was
direction.
A time of Correa and Lindor, and like a couple of shortstops came up as instant superstars,
right,
which skewed the view of Rosario's normal development.
Right. Okay, so you mentioned GMs. I'm going to try and segue this into...
That was a good opener, Doug.
Thank you.
He sprung that on me. He didn't want to tell me what it was. That's a discussion. This prospect thing is an endlessly fascinating discussion.
It is.
And by the way, the Dom Smith thing, I feel good about Dom Smith's future, moderately so. I think that this is a guy more than Alonso who I'd want to see at first base next year for the Mets, because he's had the time to go through some of the bumps. The talent is there, so let's see how he can do it. If Jay Bruce isn't clogging up first base, that's another story. But to your point, the development process is still, those twists and turns are still happening for a guy like Smith. And it'd be interesting to see where Alonso's way earlier in that process.
Right. I agree. I think Dom Smith deserves a shot. I'm not sure realistically if it will come with the Mets. But I also, what I'm saying is he deserves a shot, and I think he's fully capable of taking advantage of it. Like, just because things haven't gone his way. Like, when he misses a game because he's hurt, you can't be like, well, another tale in the story of Dom Smith. Those happen to every player. Mm-hmm. It's just situationally problematic for him. So two pieces of reporting that I want to hear from you on. You have a column up on SNY.TV right now about the GM search, about Terry Collins potentially in an expanded role. Let's start there. What's the latest?
Terry Collins, I can report, is the new president of baseball operations. But no, I'm just kidding.
To who? For what?
Look, the thing, obviously, news stories are coming out all the time linking names to Mets leadership openings. And the main thing that I want to stress is that everything I'm writing or saying about this is done in the spirit of a relatively preliminary thing, where the Mets are brainstorming, reporters like myself and many others are doing their jobs, and some details get out from time to time. But I really think that we need to be cautious, anyone needs to be cautious in saying, the Mets are thinking this, the Mets are thinking that, because it's still, there's so many different approaches that they're still considering. Obviously, we've heard about analytics versus old school. I think that's a little bit oversimplified in terms of the fact that, like, the battle lines are being drawn. I think that there are different philosophies. I know that Fred Wilpon is an old school baseball guy. I know that Jeff Wilpon is interested in maybe a younger cutting edge person. But in terms of, like, that being a hardened battle line internally, I don't see it that way. I just think that there's a lot of debate and discussion and trying to figure out what to do. So that's where they're still at. Now, having given it that elaborate setup, a couple things that are actually verifiable facts at this point is that Terry Collins has been asked to consider a bigger role in the front office next year. This year, he's just kind of helping out on player development. He's been pretty active.
Do you think they want his help picking the guy that they choose? And that's part of
No, I don't think so. That wouldn't be my understanding. My understanding would be that his opinion is valued.
Okay.
He's been giving them a lot of feedback this year on their farm system. He's been quietly pretty active. Like, when I was in Vegas to talk to David Wright, one of the guys working for the 51s was like, oh, Terry's been out here all the time, just doing different things all year. We don't really hear about it, but he's gotten himself pretty plugged into their system. Paul DePodesta once called Terry Collins an absolute star in player development. So if he had some enhanced role there, I wouldn't be surprised. But also, Fred Wilpon just likes talking to him and respects his opinion. So he could get a bump in terms of, I believe his title now is special assistant to the GM, which is just a very vague title. He could keep the title, but just increase his leverage or power or influence, I should say, more than power. He's not certainly a candidate for GM or to run the thing, but he is somebody who, as a former manager now, kind of climbing the ranks almost accidentally of the front office, is kind of interesting. Now, none of this is set in stone, and none of this will be decided until they know who's going to be in charge of baseball ops. So, Terry, you're not going to hear that Terry's gotten some new title until the bigger picture things are settled, I think.
And you have a name.
Oh, yes, Mark Shapiro.
Okay.
This is someone to look at. I'm not the first one to throw this name out there. I think it came from a Nick Cafardo column, and then Joel Sherman wrote it, blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever. It's a lot of people are writing a lot of things. But that is a name that I think has some staying power. Mark Shapiro, who was the longtime GM and then president of the Indians, is now the president of the Toronto Blue Jays. Still under contract to the Blue Jays next year, but there's been some indication that he may not be happy there. I don't want to speak for that. I haven't spoken to Mark Shapiro. I reached out to him. I didn't hear back from him. So I can't speak for where he's at, but I can tell you that a lot of people around the Mets are saying this is a fit because, A, really, really close friends with Omar Minaya, who's going to be a integral part of the Mets' power structure going forward. His father, Ron Shapiro, is a really, really well-known agent in the game. Cal Ripken's agent, Joe Mauer's agent more recently. Just one of these respected guys. Ron Shapiro is kind of viewed as the anti-Scott Boras. He encourages his clients, like Ripken and Mauer, to stay with their team long-term and have stability over, like, maximum contract. Anyway, Ron Shapiro is said to be a long-time relationship with Fred Wilpon that's very good. There's just a lot of connections there. And he, as a member of the Indians front office that created Paul DePodesta and Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff, who's their GM now, a very analytically inclined group. So there's a chance that, like Ben Cherington, actually, Shapiro could be kind of a compromise candidate, pleasing everyone in the Mets front office who likes scouting, who likes old school, who likes having some stature in the game, who likes analytics. Shapiro has a lot of that. So that's somebody who I would keep an eye on, although complicated by the fact that he's got a job.
And well, I was just going off of that. It goes back to the conversation we had last week on the podcast that they would only be able to hire a president by making him the president of baseball operations. It goes back. He's not going to take a GM role.
Of course.
I know
yeah.
It doesn't make a huge difference in actual job.
Right. It directly connects to the conversation we had last week. That's
right.
A good point.
And the second thing I was going to say is it makes sense no matter who he is, that the GM or president of the Blue Jays would leave. Because just in the same vein we talk about Dan Duquette leaving, I know that Shapiro's under contract, but, you know, the Blue Jays are getting rid of Gibbons. They've really, for the most part, sold. So they're going to move forward in a different direction. You know, I don't know if the Blue Jays feel like Shapiro's not the guy to make all those decisions and push them in a new direction with the Red Sox and Yankees both young and great at the top of the division. So if I'm him, I look at the next 5 years. If you look at your life as a 5-year plan, 5-10-year plan, taking the president job of the Mets would certainly make sense to me in terms of your ability to grow. And we're seeing in the National League Central and across Major League Baseball right now that any team can basically win any division every year.
Especially in the National League.
Yes.
Especially in the National League East. Holy God, is the National League East terrible?
It's terrible.
If you play 162 games in that god-awful division, you got a shot, unless you're the Marlins.
And what were the Nats thinking, getting nothing back for a bunch of really good players when they were, what, 7 games out?
Well,
I know that they probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
But at least hold out hope while the Braves and Phillies are just treading water in
purgatory and
mediocrity.
The Phillies are really terrible.
Yes.
The Braves are just a young team that should be in second or third place as they ascend, and they happen to be about to win the division because the division is horrible.
Yeah, so
if you got Jacob deGrom and Noah Syndergaard in that division next year,
right,
take a shot.
I'm saying, you know, that job looks more appealing than it sounds because to a baseball mind, you probably think, we got a shot because of how much of a crapshoot this all is.
Right. And, look, I think the Blue Jays and the Mets are in some similar situations in a way because they're both, if they're going to do a rebuild, they haven't quite started yet. Like, so it would be a long haul for both. But the Mets aren't in the AL East.
Yeah. Right. And the Mets have more of a nucleus that could technically, if everything goes right,
yeah,
I'm air quoting, win next year. Blue Jays, a lot of weird stuff would have to happen for the Blue Jays to win in 2019.
Now, I know they feel good about where they're at. Ben Cherington, talking to people around him, who is a top assistant with the Blue Jays now, is very reluctant to leave that organization because it's supposedly a good culture there, and they like whatever direction they believe they're heading in, they bought into. So we'll see what happens. But Shapiro's a name to follow. I still think Dan Duquette, that you mentioned, is a name to follow. Cherington, basically,
what's Cherington's title right now?
I think he's a special assistant to GM Ross Atkins. And if he's not a special assistant, he's got that
Shapiro,
type of title.
So Shapiro, Ross Atkins.
And then Cherington is underneath, yeah.
Wow. So there's a lot of interesting names in that one organization.
Well, there's another thought, which I can confidently report has not really been discussed, but to just import Shapiro and Cherington, because those two work well together, would be interesting. Shapiro with John Ricco as the GM is something that I think could be a good idea. So there's a lot of different ways to look at this, and maybe Shapiro's got nothing to do with it, and maybe Dan Duquette comes in, or still the possibility of the younger guy, your David Stearns type. I wouldn't go in that direction, but all things are still pretty much on the table here, from old to young to everything in between. But somebody is inheriting such an infrastructure now. So Minaya is going to be a big part of it. Ricco, if he wants to stay, is going to be a big part of it. Now Terry Collins is going to be a big part of it. So it's going to take a particular person with good relationships with many of those guys to come in and say, like, okay, I'll work with you. I can't necessarily bring in all my guys. The guys are here already, and they're trying to bring in a GM. It's odd. Remember when Alderson came in, he got to bring in Ricciardi, DePodesta. Then they brought in their own guys for the scouting department. Sandy built an organization, and this new guy is inheriting an organization. So that's a very different dynamic, and will impact who they can bring in. So Minaya being close with Shapiro then becomes a factor. Or Dan Duquette being...
Why don't they just give the job to Minaya again?
He doesn't want it, is one thing.
I'm not advocating for that, but you mentioned his name so often.
Well, he's a close confidant, excuse me, just finishing up puberty here. He's a close confidant of Fred Wilpon, so he has a lot of influence right now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather be the close confidant than the decider if you're at his stage of his career?
Yeah, I was thinking about that with Terry Collins. He's probably enjoying it. Gets to be around baseball as much as he wants, gets to help out, and the Mets certainly like having him in that role. He just has a lot less pressure on him, and you know, he's probably working on that Terry Collins tan a little more often than he was as the manager.
Terry's very dramatically.
Less of that red face and more of that, you know, nice brown.
Only when you see Terry in street clothes do you fully appreciate the bold contrast between the whiteness of his hair and the leatheriness of his face.
Yeah, especially start of spring training.
It's like, boom, it really pops.
He's been down in Florida for a while. He's got that good look.
He looks a little bit like a mini Roger Sterling to me. Like a kind of a white-haired guy. Do you see that comp at all?
Maybe, yeah. His hair is different than Sterling's, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have a different physique.
That's true.
I want to get to another thing. End of last week, basically the start of our show, I think it was on Friday, I believe it was I was asking Jim Duquette, and he used this phrase, I didn't, but he said, basically, you're trying to figure out where we are on the BS meter with David Wright. And I thought that was interesting because...
Who's BS? Wrights or the teams? Or what do we mean?
Kind of a little bit on the team side. So as soon as Ricco spoke, everybody jumped to this conclusion that, oh, man, they're coming up with excuses not to play this guy. This is going to be messy. And basically, the spot that I put Jim Duquette in on the show was... Should we be jumping there, or is this just good business from a businessman?
What did Jim say? I don't watch this show that you speak of.
Jim said, we're not at that point yet where people should jump to conclusions, because this is just people saying the right things. And that's where...
Strongly agree.
Right. So since that point, you were there on Saturday?
Yeah, I was there for his sim game. Had the chance to talk to Wright more. I feel like I got a pretty good feel for this story. Went out to Vegas, talked to him a lot. I've talked to the team a lot about everything. And when I'll just repeat what I'm sticking to. As this has gone up and down with the way it seems like it's going to go, based on public comments of various people, I'm sticking to my projection that he's most likely going to play. I think he's going to play this year. And I think everyone's going to forget about this bumpy period, bumpy-ish period. I think some of the bumpiness is a projection, because there really isn't anything bad going on.
It's bumpiness when people are just... forecasting the future.
Now,
there's not anything turbulent right now.
Right. People say, like, how could the Mets not play David Wright because of insurance? It's like, well, that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
like,
it hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't played out that way.
Now, it is a lot of money.
Yeah, he's asking for the chance to play when a couple million dollars are at stake, when he's not necessarily a productive player, going to be a productive player. So it's not like he doesn't have... I think you could look at this from a lot of different directions. I happen to look at this from David Wright's perspective of he's put in two plus years of rehab. He's been a great Met. He's been a great representative for the team. And it would be just nice for everybody if he could go out on his terms, which is a big deal for athletes.
I think almost everybody agrees with you.
Yeah, I think so. It's not a particularly controversial opinion. One could say the Mets don't owe him anything. They've been paying him all along. If he's not ready to play, he's not ready to play. And if he's anybody else, they would have sent him home already. That's not wrong. It's not how I feel.
No, right. And the if he's anybody else thing is such a
because he's not anybody else.
Because he's not.
Right.
Because he's David Wright. Because he's worked so hard to get back. And it's not.
But I think it's going to be fine. That's my point.
Yeah. And it's not letting him play and paying him the money is not a petty thing. It's not like here, David, take it. You know, you've earned it. It is a rewarding hard work. It's
sure.
It's not watching some guy just walk off into the sunset. It's this guy has had shoulder, neck, and back issues and wants to play baseball. He's the captain of our team. He was a great player in better times. Let's give him a shot.
I agree. I think that's a good point. It's not like a charity case. I mean, look, it's complex. It is rewarding work. I think that's good to put. It's not. You remember there's the Marlins let a guy named, I think his name was Adam Greenberg, taking a bat a couple years ago where the guy had like come up to the big leagues several years earlier. He gotten hit with the only pitch he saw. He never got an official at bat. So the Marlins is a nice thing. And the like last series of the season, let him come back and get an at bat. And it was like, yay. And it's funny because he had to face R.A. Dickey. It's like, you mean I got a knuckleball? And he struck out on three pitches, I think. But the point is that was a total charity case. David Wright is has put in the work. You make a good point. And again, I just think it's going to be okay. Look, if we do this podcast in the first week of the off season, and Wright hasn't played, we'll assess that and we'll unpack that at the time. And it's possible. I'm not guaranteeing he's going to play. I'm just saying my sense is from doing my reporting that he's going to play. If he doesn't, then we'll see why, and we'll talk, and we'll see how everybody feels about it. I think he can be upset if he doesn't play. I do. I think this relative peace between him and the team will not withstand him not playing.
Right.
But it hadn't happened yet.
Right. That's the whole point. I think he will get angry and deserves to get angry, but who knows if he'll even get to that point.
I'll share this. After he did his availability on the field, after the sim game, he talked to the media on the field. I talked to him in the locker room a little bit after, and I just said, you know, my feel is that you're still going to play. And we were having a casual conversation, but he kind of like snapped to attention when I said that and got a little serious. And he goes, I'm going to play. Oh, I'm going to play like that. So that's where he's at. It's not like, oh, let's see what happens. He thinks he's going to play. And if reality is otherwise, that will be a different conversation.
Do you think he is, what percentage would you say he's compromised as a player?
It's a great question. I saw him play one game in Vegas, and I saw him play the sim game. I think that you've seen nothing really in his at-bats to suggest that he's in great shape with his timing. He hit one home run off of Tim Peterson. The jokes write themselves, Tim Peterson, and people made them on Twitter. And, you know, look, it was good. He did hit that ball well. He was 0-for-5 the day I saw him in Vegas. He says his timing's not great. Defensively, he's not looking like he's throwing particularly strongly. He looks like he's moving okay. His footwork is pretty good. He made that charging play that we talked about with a barehanded ground ball, a slow grounder in Vegas that I saw, which requires some comfort and athleticism. I don't think he looks totally comfortable, and he's not standing there saying that he's pain-free. So I think he's compromised. I think he's pretty much finished as a major league player, and he knows it. So that would suggest very compromised.
Yeah, another thing that I think people should remember, and this is, I think, a conversation that Adam and I had when he was on the podcast, he is not portraying. It's not like when you interviewed him, he was like, I feel great.
Never has he said that.
Right.
Yeah.
So it would be different. Even if you do want to forecast that there's turbulent waters ahead, you can't. It's not like David Wright's been saying, I feel great. Get me out there. I know I'm going to be a productive member of this team. I can play 4 days in a row. Fine. My body feels great. He is, at best, cautiously optimistic. So why would the team then come out and say, yeah, he looks great. Whenever he wants to play, he can play. The team is allowed to mirror what the player is saying. And that's basically.
What do you mean mirror? You mean like.
Like I'm saying. If David is saying, look, I'd like to play again. Mm-hmm. I'm struggling with my health. I haven't played 3 games in a row
yet. I see what
yet.
You're saying, yeah.
Then why would the Mets come out and say either, yeah, he can't play, we don't want him to play, or, yeah, whenever Dave, we think David looks great.
Now, look, John Rico's comments have been definitely on the negative side. And I do think that there's a part of Wright that's wondering, like, I get it, but, like, you have to say it quite that way.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But,
I do.
But it's still, it's minor. If it's anything, it's a blip. Until the day comes where this, if the season ends and he hasn't played, again, different conversation. But I assume he's going to play a little bit. And I would then predict that he's going to probably retire in the offseason.
Rico has not been warm and fuzzy about it.
No, and he's playing a role. And Wright is playing a role of advocating for himself. And Rico's playing a role of probably tamping down expectations. The team doesn't want to get their fans excited. The team has a lot of considerations here to think about that, frankly, they won't open up too much about. Like, it's not easy even to get team officials who talk about a lot of things to talk about this. It's a sensitive topic, and they've decided this is how they're going to handle it. We'll see how it plays out. But, I'll say for the last time, I think he's going to be fine.
But what's the downside of Rico being warm and fuzzy? Like, I know I'm presenting kind of two sides of this argument, but I'm just, I'm picking your brain. Why wouldn't Rico come out and say what we all know, which is David Wright is compromised as a big league player. David Wright has meant a lot to this franchise for a long time. We've already paid David Wright a lot of money, and frankly, paying him is different than paying other guys. Whenever we think he should be back on a big league field, we will put him out there. And I think we'd like to do that by the end of the season.
Why isn't he saying that?
Why wouldn't he say that?
If
it's not financial, that's the skeptic in me. If it's not financial, why not say that?
I think that's a good question. I'd love to give him some truth serum and have him on set and ask him. I don't want to speak for John Rico or what the organization wants to do or why they want to say what they want to say. I think you ask a good question. I'm not dodging it. That's a fair question of the Mets organization, of which I am not a part.
Right. And to me, that is the question that leads to the skepticism out there. So for any fan listening, I'm not saying you're crazy for thinking that there's something afoot here. I'm just saying don't jump to that conclusion yet.
Yeah, people are just taking it down the line.
Be skeptical, but that's all you can be now. You can't. There's no sure thing here yet.
Right, right.
So
we'll see. We'll know soon, one way or the other.
The other thing we have on our outline is funny because Jeff's curious about who's producing, is curious about DeGrom. And it says, how are the Mets, potentially getting in the way of DeGrom winning the Cy Young? And under that
are these
long lists of questions. Scheduling issues this week. Were they right to push him on Sunday? Does losing a start hurt? Does the team's lack of run support actually help him by getting him more notice? All of those are fascinating questions. I find the last one to be the most interesting because if his record wasn't a story, I still think we'd be talking about him if he were 12-12 instead of... He's 8-8 still?
I don't know. I don't care about wins or losses.
And you should.
I don't know his record.
But
it's something like
he's
that.
He's especially noteworthy because of his record.
I think so. Does that actually help him because it creates a narrative around tough luck DeGrom? It all depends who the voters are. This public opinion doesn't matter in the Cy Young vote. The opinions of the handful of BBWA writers who have the vote is the only thing that matters, right? So if the writer is Johnny Jerkstore of the New York BBWA chapter and he thinks that he is smarter than everybody else and sabermetrically inclined, he's going to vote for DeGrom. If it's Jeffrey Jerkstore, who's an old school wins matter guy, he's going to vote for
Johnny
Scherzer.
Jeffrey do not get along.
No, they're brothers, but they have totally different outlooks on
Mr. and Mrs. Jerkstore. Thanksgivings are not fun in that family.
So, right, they argue about, analytics versus traditional metrics like wins and losses, and it all depends on which one of those guys gets the vote. That's all that matters.
I just think he's the best pitcher in baseball. And whether he has four starts or five, he has four left because of the stupid rain out, stupid yesterday when there was stupid no rain coming down last night.
Oh, is that right? I just remember a rainy day. It wasn't raining.
It was pouring rain all day, which I understand is bad in the outfield and may have led to puddling because, it was raining
all day.
Phillies
had the blowtorch their field.
So, look, he's the best pitcher in baseball. Just give him the Cy Young and let's move on.
Okay, sure.
Listen to what I'm saying. Both of you, please just vote for him.
Johnny, Jeffrey, Joe, whatever I called them.
Come together and view it.
I heard we have a hard out in 35 seconds.
Yeah,
Should we talk about our Saturday nights?
Yes. What did I do? Oh, pressure's on.
You hung out with your dad. You were in New Jersey.
Oh, gosh.
Right? I'm guessing.
No. I was in Domino Park in Williamsburg during the day.
Look at you.
Hanging out. Then I came home and my friends Tyler and Laura came over. We hung out. We watched Deadpool 2.
Tyler Bachelor and Laura Albanese?
No, frankly. Not Laura Albanese, the Newsday writer, or Tyler Bachelor, the Mets reliever.
Neither of them.
Neither of those two guys.
Okay.
What did you do?
I went to a pirate and mermaid party. I was a pirate.
All right, I'm...
You should have seen the look he just gave me. I was a pirate.
This has been the Shay Anything podcast. Please subscribe to us, rate, and review us. For Andy Martino, the pirate.
I had a pirate hat. I had a hook on my hand. And I actually had a puffy shirt. It was black. The Jerry Seinfeld one was white. But I wore a puffy shirt. And I was a pirate. And there were mermaids as well.
Okay. thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week.